King Solomon asked many questions of his trusted friend and advisor, Benaiah, who was almost as wise and handsome as Solomon himself. Benaiah had always answered with great confidence and wisdom, for he too was a great scholar. Benaiah was also a loyal friend. He always did whatever King Solomon asked of him without question. One day Solomon said to Benaiah, "My friend, I am seeking an extraordinary ring, one that has the power to make a happy man sad and a sad man happy. I am sending you on a mission to find such a ring, but you must return within 30 days. Solomon knew that such a ring did not exist, but he enjoyed having the power to send his friend on a fool's errand. Always a competitive man, Solomon tried to find ways to see if he could outwit his friend. He enjoyed playing chess with Benaiah, but just the week before had lost a game to him. Perhaps Solomon was still feeling the sting of this loss. It had never happened before, and he wanted to teach his friend a lesson. Solomon was certain that Benaiah would return in 30 days without the ring. Then he could laugh at seeing his friend humbled. But Solomon was also looking forward to hearing about Benaiah's adventures along the way. He was sure that they would still be good friends when he explained that he had sent Benaiah on a fool's errand. Besides, discussing the trip would give them many evenings of diversion from the serious business of running a kingdom. The next morning, Benaiah set out on his journey to find a special ring. Trusting his friend, he never stopped to think that Solomon might be playing a trick on him. Benaiah rode his horse from place to place in search of the ring. He stopped at a jeweler's shops, and he wandered into craft stalls, marketplaces in each town that he came to. Everywhere he stopped, he asked, "Do you know of a special ring that would make a happy man sad and a sad man happy?" Whenever he asked the question, the jewelers looked at him as though he were a madman. "How can a ring make a happy man sad and a sad man happy? That is impossible. You are surely on a fool's errand," they all told him. It was nearly the end of the 30 days when Benaiah returned to Jerusalem. For the first time, he was certain that he would fail his beloved king. He was walking along a narrow, crooked street when he passed a small shop filled with rings and thought, "I'll try this last one place." Entering the shop, he saw the jeweler and his apprentice working side by side. Benaiah waited until the jeweler looked up. Then he asked, "Do you know of a special ring that can make a happy man into a sad man and a sad man into a happy man?" Expecting the jeweler to reply with a laugh, as they had all done up until now, Benaiah began to leave. "Of course I know of such a ring. In fact, I have such a ring. Wait here," answered the jeweler. The jeweler went to the back of the shop. He returned a few moments later with a plain gold ring in his hand. When Benaiah looked closer, he was able to see three Hebrew letters engraved on the ring: Gimel, Zion, and Yud. Benaiah laughed out loud, his spirits lifted. He thanked the jeweler and gave him a great sum of money in exchange for this ring. Benaiah quickly rode back to Solomon's palace. Seeing Benaiah enter the throne room, Solomon began to anticipate how amused he would be when Benaiah told him that he had failed. Instead, Benaiah strode up to the king and handed him the gold ring. King Solomon looked at it. Then he looked closer and saw the three Hebrew letters. His laugh froze on his face as he realized what they stood for. "This too shall pass." After a few moments, Solomon's face grew somber and he said, "I now realize that all my great wisdom and power is only for the moment. One day another will sit on my throne." Then turning to his friend, Solomon said, "Benaiah, you have proven once again to be a faithful and wise friend. What's more, you have taught me a great lesson. For that, I thank you with a grateful heart." Benaiah had indeed succeeded in finding an extraordinary ring. Now, some of you probably recognize that story. I don't think anyone has used that lately up here. I hope not. At least I don't remember it. That isn't our Bible time for the second split sermon. That's just a story. It's actually probably from Persian descent that kind of morphed into King Solomon. That particular version was from The Hungry Clothes and Other Jewish Folktales, retold by Peninnah Schramm. But the point, this too shall pass. In the good times, and in the not-so-good times. Realizing that can certainly make a happy man sad and a sad man happy. Now, how time passes certainly changes as we grow older. We're actually leaving for Camp Arrowhead early tomorrow morning. Owen has been looking forward to this camp, his first camp, for months. That is a really long time when you're seven and thinking about something all day, every day. Like some of you, I'm sure, I've been watching a little bit of the Olympic Games this week. I heard a little bit about Tammy enjoying those last week. But when I was younger, it felt like the Olympic Games took forever to come back around. 4 years is a super long time when you're a kid. Now it doesn't feel that way at all. I remember vividly watching the last one, and the one before that, and the one before that. I used to get Sports Illustrated for Kids when I was younger and remember some of the covers of the magazines that were promoting the Olympics. The first one I actually remember as a kid, this is from 1992. The Dream Team, Dan versus Dave. Does anyone remember Dan versus Dave? No? Only one? A couple do? Okay. It made a big impact on me. I was 9 years old then, and just getting into sports. Reebok had a series of commercials that were promoting these two athletes that were expected to compete for the gold medal in the decathlon, which some argue is the greatest test of an athlete while you run, jump, and throw in 10 different events. But Dave Johnson and Dan O'Brien were the names of the guys, if that takes apparently only two of us back. But Dan failed on the pole vault in the trials, and he didn't even make it after all this fanfare. And Dave ended up getting third, the bronze medal. So it really should have been called Robert versus Antonio, as those are the two guys that actually won the thing. So I've got to be careful talking about Olympics. I'll spend my whole time up here. Getting back to our story, Solomon, right then and there in the story, understood that everything he had was temporary. And while, again, that was just a story, Solomon certainly did understand that in real life, as evidenced by what he wrote in the book of Ecclesiastes, which we'll turn to here in just a few moments. We personally are starting to look really forward to the Feast of Tabernacles coming soon. We understand that the feast represents a temporary life, a temporary place on this earth. This is more of a feast-like split sermon, but it was what was on my mind this past week. So in Leviticus 23, God tells the Israelites to take branches of palm trees, of leafy trees, to make booths to dwell for a very temporary period. Why? Because the booths won't last. That's the point. Nowadays, we stay in condos or other accommodations, but I know that I won't last there because I can't afford it. But temporary dwellings are a reminder that our physical bodies we live in are temporary. The houses we live in, our homes, are temporary. This life is temporary. The bodies we have, our health, is temporary. The riches we have, or lack thereof, are temporary. Our troubles, our trials, our tests, are temporary. And there's a reason historically that Ecclesiastes was read during the Feast of Tabernacles. If you just read snippets of this book, you might say that it's a downer, it's depressing, why read it? But is it, really? Let's turn over to Ecclesiastes 1. Start the first two verses here in Ecclesiastes 1. Ecclesiastes 1:1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, Solomon, of course, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now, vanity can mean something meaningless or pointless or without purpose. It can also mean breath as a transitory thing. As Job said in Job 7:16, I loathe my life, I would not live forever. Let me alone, for my days are but a breath. Continue here in verse 3. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. Everything comes and it goes. Cycles come and they go. Seasons come and they go. Lifetimes, they come and they go. And yet we find ourselves constantly focused on the here and the now, constantly focused on this temporary human existence, temporary human futility. We are constantly in need of a shift in our mind gears. Let's read on here in verse 8. Ecclesiastes 1 and verse 8. All things are full of labor, man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is what will be, that which is done is what will be done. And there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it may be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after. From one generation to the next, things are forgotten over time. People are forgotten over time. Should God allow time to progress on, I probably will never know my great-grandchildren. I might, and I hope I do. I possibly might not even know my grandchildren. We don't know what tomorrow holds. Generations come and generations go. And yet, the only thing we see around us are people obsessed with other people, obsessed with celebrities, obsessed with money, obsessed with passing pleasures, and not obsessed with their God, who is eternal. Let's turn back to Hebrews 11. Several places that Greg went to close to where we're going to go that will go hand in hand, hopefully, and not overlap. Hebrews 11 and verse 13. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that they were the strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. And truly, if they had called to mind that country from which they had come out, they would have had opportunity to return. But now they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. These people that are being described, those in the preceding verses here in the faith chapter, had successfully shifted the gears of their minds from the temporary to the eternal. Verse 24. By faith Moses, when he had become of age, this is Hebrews 11:24. When he had become of age, he refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt, for he looked to the reward. By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. A shift in the mind. Moses looked to the real reward. Moses had riches. He had the best the world had to offer him in his position. Yet he chose to give it up for something better. He successfully shifted the gears of his mind to that which he couldn't see, he couldn't feel, he couldn't touch. He understood the reward, which we'll read about over in chapter 12 and verse 28. Hebrews 12, verse 28, should be across the page or a page over or so. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom which cannot be shaken, let us have grace by which we may serve God acceptably with reverence and godly fear. How much of our day-to-day lives do we think about this reward which cannot be shaken? How often is your mind in this gear? Occasionally? On the Sabbath? Or every day? Are we thinking upon the eternal, in the gear of the eternal, if you will, on a daily basis? Let's go back to the book of Ecclesiastes now, to the last chapter. The last chapter is a summary of the book. Chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. Start here at verse 1 of Ecclesiastes 12. Remember now your Creator in the days of your youth, before the difficult days come. And the years draw near when you say, I have no pleasure in them. Now we can love life, and we should, but sometimes it can be difficult. We don't have to love everything that happens to us, but the testing of our faith is what produces the endurance that we need. We are to let that patience have its perfect work. Of course, having joy during trials is one of the biggest challenges of this human existence. Verse 6, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 6, remember your Creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. We must remember our Creator before it is too late. We can't expect success if we're standing holding a broken pitcher when the time comes. We heard about that in the first message. Verse 7, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. We all know we will return to dust. Once you're back to dust, it's too late then to remember your Creator. Verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. Obeying God and His commandments is our all. It's the purpose of why we're here. There are a number of places in the Bible where human existence is boiled down to a very simple set of instructions. We heard about one recently in Micah 6:8 a few weeks ago. But rather than just live and die as a vapor that comes to pass and then disappears into the air without meaning, we can shift our minds to something better. To fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all. Christ said the same over in Matthew 6, if you'll turn there with me. He had the same message as Solomon. Matthew 6, we'll read verses 19 to 21. Matthew 6:19, do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. The same message as Solomon. This earth, its rewards, our lives will pass away like a vapor. Are you and I solely focused on the temporary most of the time? Or are we shifting our minds, our mental gears, to the eternal? What gear are you in on a Tuesday, midday? I'm sure I'm not surprising you with any of these common scriptures that we often read during the feast. But with the Feast of Trumpets just over 5 weeks away, I'm hoping it will start to get you in the feast spirit if you're not there already. We're going to go over to Romans 8. Romans 8:18. Romans 8 and verse 18. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us. For the earnest expectation of the creation eagerly waits for the revealing of the sons of God. For the creation was subjected to futility, not willingly, but because of him who subjected it in hope. Because life is a vapor. This world is a vapor. It will decay and already is decaying. Verse 21, because the creation itself also will be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groans and labors with birth pangs together until now. Not only that, but we also who have the first fruits of the Spirit, even we ourselves groan within ourselves, eagerly waiting for the adoption, the redemption of our body. For we were saved in this hope, but hope that is seen is not hope. For why does one still hope for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we eagerly wait for it with perseverance. We'll stop right there where Greg picked up. But we don't hope for things we already have. We hope for things we are looking forward to. For a change. From vapor to something real, to something eternal. If that's truly the most important goal in our lives, are we really focused on it? Are we in the right gear? Turn over to the resurrection chapter in 1 Corinthians 15 with me. First Corinthians 15, we'll start in verse 50. First Corinthians 15 and verse 50. Now this I say, brethren, that flesh and blood cannot inherit the kingdom of God, nor does corruption inherit incorruption. Behold, I tell you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. In a moment, in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trumpet, for the trumpet will sound, and the dead will be raised incorruptible, and we shall be changed. Now, for this to be true for us, to be changed from something temporary to something permanent, a massive shift has to take place in our existence. From a vapor, from a this too shall pass living, to something else, to something permanent. An existence that this too shall never pass, of eternal life, at the risk of sounding a little bit like Gandalf there. Verse 53, here in 1 Corinthians 15. For this corruptible must put on incorruption, and this mortal must put on immortality. So when this corruptible has put on incorruption, and this mortal has put on immortality, then shall be brought to pass the saying that is written, death is swallowed up in victory. Paul concludes same way that Solomon did down in verse 58. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be steadfast, immovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, knowing that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Our vanity of life, our vapor, will eventually come to an end. But what permanent things will we take from this life? Our lives are temporary. I hope that we get that by now. If you didn't know before, of course. What do we take with us? What is lasting? As I'm sure you all know, we will take with us godly character, our growth, our righteousness that we have developed through the Holy Spirit. But how can this be the case if you're in the wrong gear? If I'm in the wrong gear, if we're only focused on the temporary. When we become eternal, that godly character will not pass away. The relationship that we have with God the Father and Jesus Christ will not pass away. That gets carried over from this lifetime, from this vapor. Solomon learned this over the course of his life. Paul learned this. Moses knew this, as we read. Those listed in Hebrews 11 understood this. And Christ reemphasizes this. Let's turn over to the parable of the rich fool in Luke 12. Read verses 15 to 21 here in Luke 12. Luke 12 and verse 15. And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." And then he spoke a parable to them, saying, "The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, 'What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?' So he said, 'I will do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all of my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." Do you and I take our greatest pleasure in these things that are temporary? Is that what we dwell on? Is that what consumes our thoughts, our minds on a daily basis? I'm guilty of this. I spend a lot of time thinking about saving and investing and spending money wisely. I have four people whose lives depend on me doing that, providing for them. And I don't need bigger barns. I don't want bigger barns. I just want a pool. So insert your own items into that. Verse 21 said, "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." The word "and" is very important here. And is not rich toward God. If we're stuck in a temporary gear and not shifting towards the spiritual matters, then what good do temporary things do us? Things that will pass away. I'll just read to you Psalm 90, verse 12, which is recorded as a prayer from Moses. "So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom." I will ask you to turn over to Psalm 39, 4 with me. Psalm 39, we'll read verses 4 to 6. Psalm 39, 4. "Lord, make me to know my end, and what is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am. Indeed, you have made my days as handbreadths, and my age is as nothing before you. Certainly every man at his best state is but vapor. Surely every man walks about like a shadow. Surely they busy themselves in vain. He heaps up riches and does not know who will gather them, because they will pass away." Shadows come and they go. When the sun is first coming up or setting at the end of the day, it casts a long, formidable shadow. But that shadow is very short-lived. They disappear very quickly. They don't last long. Just like our lives from God's perspective. Now, in the moment, that shadow can be quite impressive. I like to watch travel vlogs on YouTube every once in a while. I was recently watching one on El Capitan in Yosemite. I've never been able to get out there yet, thanks COVID. But the sun coming up over El Cap, it cast a massive shadow that is quite impressive. It's amazing, it's beautiful, but it is just for a moment. That shadow will come and it will go. That mountain, from God's perspective, will come and it will go. Just a couple more verses before we close. Isaiah 40, verse 6 to 8. Isaiah 40 and verse 6. The voice said, "Cry out." And he said, "What shall I cry? All flesh is grass, and all its loveliness is like the flower of the field. The grass withers, the flower fades, because the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever." We are grass. We come and we go. We're here and then we're not. We will wither. But what endures? What matters? His word and his truth stand forever. So many things are temporary that we've talked about today. Even the millennium, which God will establish, even it is temporary. 1,000 years of peace is a beautiful thing, and it seems like an eternity to us, it does to me at least. It too is temporary. Governments, schools, churches will teach God's way. It will be wonderful. They will teach God's laws. His laws are eternal. But 1,000 years, just like you and I, will pass. It will come, and then it will go. Revelation chapter 20. End over in the book of Revelation. Read verses 11 and 12. If you look up the page, you'll see the saints reign with Christ 1,000 years above, if you have a heading there. So that has come, and it's gone. Verse 11 here in Revelation 20. "Then I saw a great white throne, and him who sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. And there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God, and books were opened. And another book was opened, which is the book of life. And the dead were judged according to their works by the things which were written in the books." Of course, the great white throne judgment. Which means the 1,000 years have come and they've gone. Despite how great it will be, like a vapor, once it's gone, it's over. Let's shift to another gear, an eternal gear in our minds. Something so different than what we can understand with our temporary human mind. Something so different that it's almost impossible for us to understand. It's so impossible because it's almost too good to be true. But we all can remember what the Bible says about God and the impossible, right? Drop down to verse 21. Chapter 21, verse 1. "Now I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, 'Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people. God himself will be with them and be their God. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying. There shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away.'" Finally, the final shift from the temporary to the permanent, to the eternal. Yes, for us now, this too shall pass. Will you and I successfully shift the gears of our mind from the temporary to the eternal? Am I, are you, in the right gear?